This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and he joins us every Tuesday to talk about growth and development right here in Central Virginia. Good afternoon, Brian.
Hello, Coy.
Get going here with the candidates. An update on the local elections. We have the primary going on. Republican, Democratic primaries are going on across the state, and we hope to have updates for you as polls close this evening. But we have the local elections here.
The race here is for the independents. The independents are all running to the registrar's office to get in their paperwork. And we do have some news on that front, and probably breaking it right here. But you've heard me talk about the race out in the Whitehall district, where David Wyant is currently the supervisor representing Whitehall. He's being challenged by Democrat Ann Malik. Dave Wyant, of course, is a Republican. But we've had an independent flirting with a race here to make this a three-way race.
Tom Loach, right?
Tom Loach, one of our listeners of this program. And I spoke to Tom today. He has the signatures to get on the ballot, but he's not going to turn him in today.
Really?
He's decided to opt out of the race.
Wow.
So that should...
Tom, if you're listening and you want to tell us why, you pick up the phone, man, and give us a call, 977-1070. We'll put you right through.
So that is one race that's now down to a two-way race between a Republican and a Democrat. But the Scottsville district is now getting more interesting. The incumbent is Lindsay Dorier, a Democrat, and he's running for another term. He was challenged at the party level, at the party convention, by Kevin Fletcher. Fletcher ran as a write-in the last time Mr. Dorier was on the ballot. And Fletcher came back this time as a Democrat, tried to get the party nomination, failed to get the Scottsville district nomination. Now, I spoke to him today, he is going to run, and he's already turned in all his paperwork. So he is an official candidate now as an independent, running against the incumbent Lindsay
Dorier. Is Denny King running down there too?
And Denny King. Denny King was still collecting signatures today. I spoke to him as well. But I expect him to be on the ballot.
How does it work, Brian? What's the nuts and bolts, the deadline, the number of signatures they need?
7 o'clock tonight is the deadline, and you need 125 signatures of people in that district to get on the ballot as an independent.
So not just anybody walking down the downtown mall or...
Unless they happen to be in your district.
They've got to be correct. In your district.
That's right.
Okay.
And so I know that folks at the both registrar's office in the city and the county are rapidly going through all these petitions because they have to look at each signature, each name, address, see if they can read it for one, and then look them up in the voter list and make sure they're actually a registered voter and then sign that off as a qualified petition signature.
So independent Tom Loach is out, not running in the Whitehall district for the Board of Supervisors. Breaking news right here.
And Kevin Fletcher, a Democrat now running as an independent, is back in the race.
In Scottsville.
So we'll have a three-way race in Scottsville. Things could get interesting in the city tonight as well. I spoke to Sherry Iachetta, who's the general registrar for the city, and she said she's been getting phone calls from other prospective candidates. So there are currently five candidates running for three seats on city council. There are three Democrats. And while you were gone last week, another independent Democrat came out, Dr. Barbara Haskins.
Yeah, Bob Gibson was telling us about that yesterday.
Yep, and Charlottesville Tomorrow actually had the first interview with her last week up on our blog. And
there's an article in Today's Progress about her motivation to run. She's upset about the budget, right?
The budget and concerned about what she called it, what trajectory that is on. She certainly highlighted when I talked to her the rescue funding and that set aside by city council of $1 million for that. So lots of questions about the budget. Interested also in the city of Charlottesville reverting to a town within Albemarle, something she thinks is worth talking about.
Again? Didn't we talk about that already?
It's going to come up in this campaign.
I thought that was settled. Or does that just keep coming up if you got it in Virginia with your cities? And do you see that being a big issue in this campaign?
Well, it
reversion
might be. We'll see how much time.
I mean, obviously, the cooperation of schools and fire and rescue will be an issue. But
that's right. So she was interested both in merging of things and reverting of the whole city. She described it to me as an interest in dissolving government structures. Those are the words she used. So she saw reversion as a way to save even more money because you'd be eliminating some of the duplication of effort. I think budget issues are always going to come up when there's a contentious budget. I think the public naturally ask, how can we do this better? How can we be more efficient? We have a neighbor here right next to us. How can we work together on these problems? So those conversations come up both at specific issues like affordable housing, transportation, and we'll see if it comes up on a grander scale. But more candidates could jump in tonight. And so after 7 o'clock tonight, I'm expecting calls from both city and county officials to let me know who the final ballot is.
Do you know of any, perhaps, who are out there collecting signatures?
I didn't get any
secretly?
Names. No, I don't.
But there could be others.
There could be others.
Yeah.
Deadline 7 o'clock. They have to certify all these signatures and make sure they're actually qualified to be on the ballot. And Charlottesville Tomorrow's blog will have an update tonight.
Brian, remind us who won the Democratic convention, the three. Mayor David Brown, of course, who's running for re-election, but the other two.
The other two are Holly Edwards, who's a nurse, works in the West Haven facility, and she is an African American, and I think got a lot of support. She was the number two vote getter at the Democratic caucus. Mayor Brown actually came in third at the caucus.
That's really interesting.
The number one vote getter was former head of the planning department, Satyendra Hooja, and Mr. Hooja was the top vote getter. So those are the three Democrats on the ballot. And you and I have talked about throughout the run-up to this deadline tonight, would there be any other interest in candidates? And so now we have two independents, and that I think will make for a more interesting discussion.
Where are the conservatives? Where are the Republicans in this city race? I mean, literally, where are they?
They have not come to the table. The city Republicans didn't have a party candidate, and we'll see if any other independents show up tonight who may lean one way or the other.
Yeah.
And maybe they want to run as an independent just to avoid that party label.
I would personally love to see it happen just because whether you win or lose, you stand for the principles and you stand up and step out and let us hear things that we're not going to hear it. I mean, we're just not.
We talked about that last week with Jay James when he was filling in for you, and about some of those obstacles to candidates coming forward. And, Mr. Loach could certainly comment on that, too, what it felt like to be, the third person running and the pressure from, different quarters of people saying, oh, I'm afraid you're going to split the vote if you run.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
there was a lot of feedback like that. And concern about the outcome of...
Oh, you
of
mean that people telling Tom that he would split the vote between
That's
him
right.
and Ann,
yep.
and then...
David Wyant.
David Wyant would win
That's
the
right.
result.
So, anyway, the other thing we'll have on our blog tomorrow will be a link to the Virginia Public Access Project, because they will release tomorrow the June 4th campaign financial disclosures. And
For
all our local candidates.
Yeah.
That's already out there for the statewide candidates. But locally, we have four big ticket donations that came in this last reporting round. And Boyd Tinsley made a $2,500 contribution to the Lindsay Dorier campaign.
Down in Scottsville.
Yep. Planning Commissioner Bill Edgerton made a $2,500 contribution to his colleague, Marcia Joseph, who's running against Ken Boyd for supervisor. And then a company named WM Management, which is run by James Morris, that company, which is a real estate company, made $2,000 contributions to both David Wyant and Ken Boyd's campaigns.
Are they Republicans?
And they are both running as Republicans,
okay.
yes. So that information will all be up on our blog tomorrow.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. And before we leave this discussion of local elections, a lot going on in that department, the voter guide that y'all do, when does that come out?
We will mail in October, late October, right before the election, voter guides in the city and the county to every household that has a contested race. And Charlottesville Tomorrow focuses, of course, on land use, transportation, community design issues. So we'll investigate where the candidates stand on those issues, get their quotes, verbatim excerpts from different events that we cover, candidate forums. But we'll also interview each candidate and compile all that together, put it in a voter guide, ship it out to every household.
And until the voter guide comes, people can go at any time to your website
That's
and
right.
see the very latest podcast and online video of whatever's going on in these elections.
That's right. Right now on the Election Watch page, you can watch every candidate forum that the city council candidates had. You can watch their launch events when each candidate said, you know, I'm running and here's why. And you know, soon we'll put up transcripts of some of those events so you can download the text as well.
Charlottesville tomorrow with our own C-SPAN right here in our humble hamlet. What's the latest on the Meadow Creek Parkway? The road we just love to hate.
Well, one component of that is the interchange, where it's going to intersect with the 250 bypass right there at the skate park and the rescue squad. That is going in front of the City Planning Commission tonight for a public hearing. That meeting starts at 6:30. Public hearing is slated to begin at 7 o'clock. And there are two options. The task force that's been looking at this is really recommending to the Planning Commission to consider. One of them is a more, new urbanist kind of, well, I don't know if that's the right word, but it involves a roundabout that's sort of squeezed in the middle and oval shaped underneath an overpass.
What?
And that's a different kind of look.
I've never heard of that. So it's like a big roundabout, a traffic circle. Underneath the overpass
to avoid having traffic lights where the traffic would intersect with the ramps going on to this 250 bypass.
That actually might be cool. I like traffic circles.
Others have said that that might take up the footprint might be too big for that kind of intersection. So they're interested in a more traditional, what they call diamond-shaped intersection.
Like Barracks Road.
The ramps coming down hit a traffic light at the bottom.
And that's like 250 in Barracks Road.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that they really need to look at in the traffic study is how long the queuing lines, how far back will the cars back up?
Yeah.
Because if they back up all the way to Park Street, then we're going to just have another problem, and people will not be able to get off. They're smarter people than I am that'll be looking at these transportation issues. But
and that's the public hearing tonight for the City Planning Commission.
Yep. So go and make your voice heard.
At 7 o'clock.
The public hearing starts at 7. The meeting actually starts at 6:30. And Charlottesville tomorrow is covering that. My colleague Sean Tubbs is there right now.
So you'll have full audio of that podcast on your site tomorrow.
And of course, the City Planning Commission is televised, so it's also available on Channel 10 on public access.
We'll continue our discussion now with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. It's Tuesday, and that means one thing, growth and development right here in Central Virginia. The phone lines are always open at 977-1070. And I have free car washes for anybody that wants to call in and participate in this conversation from courtesy of Express Car Wash. Brian, where are we going next?
Gene, you should call in so I can win that. where are we going? Let's talk briefly about the ASAP set aside. And let me explain what that is. Last week, the Board of Supervisors, there's a little bit of intrigue. These are the moments I love. You know, when you sit through a Board of Supervisors meeting for 6 hours, you look for those moments that you really get some interesting dynamics up on the stage there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they often come at the very beginning of the meeting or at the very end of the meeting. And so in the beginning of the meeting, it's called Other Business by Board Members. And sure enough, we had a juicy one last week while you were gone. The first few minutes of the meeting, Dennis Rooker, who represents the Jack Jewett District, Dennis said, hey, we've been talking about this sustainable population estimate. What's an optimal population for Albemarle County? We have a nonprofit called Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population.
That's ASAP.
Jack Marshall's
not as soon as possible, but sustainable population people.
That's right. So ASAP and Jack Marshall, his group has been asking the board to consider that. And
what's the number?
Yeah, putting a number on it.
Yeah, what's our population number?
He would want to point out that it's a range of populations.
Yeah, for an ideal number of people who could live here and we could maintain a quality of life that everyone would still enjoy.
What's the carrying capacity for the environment and for our quality of life?
Right.
And try to figure that out. Interestingly, no community in the nation has ever done this. So we would...
Really?
We would be the first to try, apparently. So ASAP came to the county and said, we'd like $25,000 to hire a consultant to help us figure this out. And the board was actually supposed to talk about it tomorrow under their capital improvement budget. That's a whole other story as to why it was lumped there. But Dennis Rooker just took the initiative, brought it up and said, hey, I think we should do it. And I didn't think he would get the votes. But sure enough, he got five votes. Ken Boyd, the chair, was opposed and voted against it. So by a 5-1 vote, they agreed to set aside $25,000. Now they'll wait for ASAP to come back with a more detailed proposal before they actually allocate the money. So it's not money in the bank yet for ASAP. But
so the county is giving public money to a local nonprofit to actually create a really in-depth study and answer that question. What is the sustainable population range for Albemarle County?
That's right. The first thing they would do is
figure out. And this has never been done before.
Never been done before. The first thing would be, what's the methodology? I mean, what factors do you need to consider?
Yeah, how do you figure that out?
How do you measure them?
Yeah.
And then the second thing would be, okay, once you've figured out how to measure it, how do you get that into our comprehensive plan so our decisions, you know, are in line with that?
Yeah. And is it binding at all?
Right. Well, and Mr.
Or is it like, you know, the Crozet Master Plan, where you can just change the number if you want to?
It was interesting. Mr. Boyd expressed some skepticism about a population cap, and he really didn't think that was a good idea for any community to try to set some artificial cap, as he called it. But he also had a problem spending the money, just period. He thought, and he pointed out, that since we're having trouble paying for police officers in the county right now, and we have a lot of openings in the police force, we shouldn't be appropriating $25,000.
Shouldn't be doing this study now.
This.
And that's going to resonate with a lot of people, don't you think?
That said, Mr. Boyd, under other business by board members last year, asked for $250,000 for a jobs development fund, how to create jobs, economic development, and that money was set aside. So different board members do it at different opportunities, and in this case, last week it was Dennis Rooker, and it sure was interesting.
Wow.
So we'll keep an eye on that story.
All righty. Other news from the County Board of Supervisors?
They are going to meet tomorrow, and as I said, talk about their capital budget. They've got a work session on affordable housing issues tomorrow, which I think will be interesting, and we'll be there covering that. A number of developments they're having public hearings for tomorrow night. If you go to Charlottesville Tomorrow's calendar at cvilletomorrow.org, you can get all the details on that meeting.
There you go.
The other thing the county's got going on is a survey. They are asking for the public's opinion, and I want to strongly encourage the public to voice their opinion on this issue, because you and I have talked about it a lot, and this is a proffer policy. Proffers, of course, are when a developer is asking for a rezoning. Biscuit Run is a good example. The land is zoned a certain way. If they want to get a greater number of homes on that land, they need to rezone it. In a rezoning, the county can encourage the developer to volunteer certain things, and those are called proffers, where the developer comes to the table and says, I'll give you this if you give me the rezoning. And
often proffers, they would put up money for it's different from impact fees.
It sometimes it's just a cash number. Sometimes it's an idea like we'll create so many affordable housing units. Sometimes it's a transportation project. In the case of Biscuit Run, there's a lot of money going into a regional transit authority for the city and the county. So it can be lots of different things.
Sewers, a new school, sidewalks.
Yep, school sites, sidewalks, street trees. Some of those things are generally required by the county's neighborhood model today, and so don't really count as proffers because
they
have to do them anyway.
Right.
But this is a cash proffer survey. So now the question is, how much cash should be coming to the table to mitigate the impact of new development? And the county.
And they often measure it by per home, right?
Per home.
Yeah.
And typically that's been about $3,200 recent projects in the county. And a committee worked on this because the county doesn't have a policy, and the development community was rightfully frustrated because they didn't know what the expectation was. They didn't know what to come to the table with. And so this committee.
How do you make a budget if you're a developer? How do you even make a budget when you don't know what the county's going to ask for proffers?
And it's also complicated because there's this dance with proffers in that the supervisors can't ask for anything specific because it has to be voluntary on the developer's part, and that relates to Virginia law and the way things work.
But you can have a stated policy.
You can have a stated policy. So the county is on that path. They don't have a policy today, but this survey will help inform that policy. So right now we have some placeholder numbers for new proffer values, and I'll just throw out the one for a single-family detached home. As I said, we used to get about $3,200 in cash per house. the policy is now recommending $17,500 per house. And so that's a big jump. But it doesn't include water sewer. It does not include projects that are not currently on the capital budget. So the capital budget is a 10-year sort of view of what we need in the community for infrastructure. And right now it's limited to that limited view. And what the county is asking for, if you went to the county website at albemarle.org, you'll see a link right there in the front which says take the cash proffer survey. It's four simple questions. There's a good summary of what's at stake here, and you don't have to answer them all if you don't know the answer, but go in and chime in and give your thoughts about whether proffers are too high, too low, just right.
So right now it's an online survey.
It's an online survey.
But at some point, I'm sure they'll be having a public hearing about this, right?
Well, they will. And in fact, this data, I would encourage people to go ahead and do it this week, because the work session is next week. The Board of Supervisors will meet June 20th, and they'll be reviewing all this feedback. And I talked to Lee Catlin with the county. She said, at the beginning of next week, she's going to encourage the supervisors to start logging in and reviewing this stuff in advance.
Yeah.
So I would just encourage the public to go ahead and get your feedback in.
And one thing that's important, and I always like to say this when we talk about proffers, is to give some context so you know what other places around growing popular places to live around Virginia, what they get for proffers, so that we're not operating in a vacuum here. Charlottesville voted the best place to live in America. We all love to live here, and the cash proffers that we've been getting per house, single family house, have been, like you say, around $3,000. Orange County has been around, what, $25,000?
There have been some projects, yeah, in that neighborhood.
Loudoun County is at, what, $35,000?
Much higher, yep.
Yeah. So. Hello. I mean, hello. I've never understood that. Why we have such a, it's just like a free ride.
You know, I was listening to your interview with Jay Willer, who's with the Blue Ridge Home Builders. The two of you were talking about this challenge of who pays for this infrastructure. And he made a good point. He said, you know, it's prudent for any organization or government to plan long term for the needs for the infrastructure. And that he said, you know, the developers that he represents are more than willing to pay their fair share. The question is, what is that fair share? This is the first time the county's really tried to put a number on it by looking at the fiscal impacts of development, looking at the data. We know what it costs to put somebody in school.
Yeah,
we know what it's going to cost to build these roads.
Let's not pull a number out of the air. Let's really figure out what is the impact when you build a home here and a family comes in and moves in. What's the impact?
That's right.
What does it cost all the rest of us in our taxes to pay for, to educate this kid that they bring with them, or kids and their cars that they put on the road, and a whole bunch of other stuff?
Yep.
Because it does cost us. And a lot of times, the taxpayers, the folks who already live here, end up picking up the bill for these new developments.
Now, at the same time, I know the realtors and the builders associations in Virginia are not too keen about these high cash proffer numbers.
Well, that's not a surprise.
And their argument, I mean, just to explain where they are, is that they say that cost will be passed on to the homeowner and that it will just make it more difficult to build affordable housing.
Right, right.
But somebody, as you said, somebody is going to pay for this. So the question is, how do we get to that right number? Here's an opportunity where the public can weigh in and let the county know.
We're just a few minutes here before the hour of 6 o'clock. Best Seat in the House coming up next after CBS News, local news, and weather. We've been talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and Dave is on line one. Dave, thanks for the call. You're on with Brian. Go right ahead.
Hey, Brian. It's Dave Phillips with the Realtors. I heard you guys talking about real estate stuff, so I thought I'd call in. I just tuned in, so I may have missed Jay making a point about the folks who are buying the new houses that are going to pay these proffers. They're not necessarily people moving in from out of the area, so it's very possible for me, for instance, who's getting ready to be an empty nester, may want to move into a new home, a smaller home, a nicer home, whatever, and I would have to pay that tax even though I've already been here and don't have kids that'll be going to the schools and that sort of thing. So I just want everybody to understand at least half of the people buying new homes are current residents.
Is it more than 50%, really?
It's 60% nationally, is what Jay told me this morning. Matter of fact, we were talking about this. And so, yeah, I think here, you know, let's say it's 50 just to have a margin of error, but 50%. And the, you know, the people moving into the area may be buying previously owned homes and not paying those fees.
Yeah, it's an excellent point, Dave. Thanks for the call. It really is a good point. Oftentimes, when we think of new construction, we just assume it's going to be somebody new moving to the area. But you're right; it could be somebody moving from the city out to the county, or vice versa.
Yep. And Dave Phillips also has a blog, and he's been talking about this on his blog. And Dave, I want you to know I was reviewing your blog postings before the show. So I appreciate you putting your views out there. I will point out that this task force that worked on the cash proffer recommendations, the Fiscal Impact Advisory Committee, did include Ken Boyd, who's chair of the Board of Supervisors, also included a representative from the Southern Environmental Law Center, and a builder. So I think it was a good example of the community really coming together and trying to find the answers in the data. One of the concerns, Dave Phillips, he didn't mention, but he's got it on his blog, is that these proffers for some of this housing in the development area might push housing to the rural area. And there's really some encouraging data for the first quarter of 2007. Only 17% of the new building permits have been issued in the rural area, 17.5%, and about 82% in the growth area. So that's a real shift from past practice. And that number for the rural area is 22% below normal, below the past 8 years of the trend, which has had about 300 homes built in the rural area every year. So that may be an indication that a lot of this, the new development that's been approved, places like North Point, even though that one hasn't started yet, Old Trail Village out in Crozet, Hollymead Town Center, Belvedere, as those developments come online, this could be an indication that growth is, for the first time now, really moving into the designated growth area where the decision makers and the county's comprehensive plan have wanted it to be.
And that's what they've been trying to do, right?
That's what they've been trying to do. And the concern by Mr. Phillips and others is that if you change that incentive and you put a higher price for a cash proffer on a house in the development area, then that builder may run somewhere else because they won't be able to sell it, be unaffordable. And I think that it is something to watch for, and that's why the Board of Supervisors is trying to come up with policies to protect the rural countryside. You can't just try to implement a fix in one place because there may be an unintended consequence that sends the growth somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that's
like squeezing a balloon.
That's why it's a complicated matter.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. And Dave, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Hold on just 1 minute, and we'll let Matt give you a free car wash just for calling in. We appreciate you joining the conversation, and we should get Dave Phillips on this program sometime.
You should. He's a good guy.
I'll have to get in touch with him. Let's break for CBS News here at the top of the hour, and Best Seat in the House is coming up next. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
And thank you, folks, for listening. Have a great night.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show can be heard every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 o'clock on News Radio 1070 WINA. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, why not check out our site for hours and hours of archives of Coy's show? You'll also find other radio programs, arts features, public affairs coverage, and more.